You're listening to the Insightful Connections podcast. Our guest today is Sue Collin. Sue Collin is an experience-rich marketing insights professional who began her career 30-plus years ago in the quantitative space and has since added a qualitative emphasis to her repertoire. She heads up RTI Research's qual practice. RTI Research is a market research and brand consultancy that helps clients in the B2B and B2C spaces move their business forward by thinking about moving from data to meaning. Sue finds that her deep quant experience offers a unique perspective in connecting the dots of nonlinear qual conversations with both B2B and B2C consumers. While she's busy handling her qual project design and moderation duties, she's always thinking ahead to how that information can be used to inform prior or subsequent research efforts and meaningfully answer the broader business objectives. Sue, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Hello, Seb. I'm so stoked to be here, especially on a Monday morning. Great way to get the day going with you. Appreciate it.
Hey guys, Seb here. Wanted to take a quick break to tell you about something I'm genuinely excited about. You know how we're always talking about getting better at understanding people and deep diving into what makes them tick? Well, there's this conference coming up that basically is heaven for anyone who loves that kind of work. It's the QRCA, Qualitative Research Consultants Association, annual conference. It's happening in Philly this February. And let me tell you, this isn't your typical stuffy corporate gathering. I've been before, and it's this amazing mix of learning and actually having fun with people who get what we do. They're doing something really cool this time around. They're opening it up to everyone in qual research, whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out. And there's something special for our listeners. I arranged for you all to get $50 off your registration with the code INSIGHTSVIP. That's INSIGHTSVIP, all one word. But wait, here's what makes this even better. Every time someone uses this code, QRCA is going to donate $25 to the Market Research Education Foundation. These folks do amazing work helping children around the world through education initiatives. So you're not just investing in your own professional development, you're helping create opportunities for kids who really need it. How cool is that? Head over to the QRCA's website to learn more and register. And don't forget that code, INSIGHTSVIP. Thanks.
I think to get us started, I'd love to learn a little bit more about how you got into market research. What's your personal journey in the space, and how does that account for where you are today?
I love that question. It may say a lot or a little, depends on what somebody's journey is. I did not fall into market research. My first job was in market research, and I went to University of Connecticut and have a degree in communication sciences, and that department is grounded in all things research. That's what the professors are all about. So I was exposed to a lot of different things regarding research, whether it was stats or running a research project. Of course, we did many. And also thinking about communication in all ways, big and small, whether it's, you know, one-on-one interpersonal like we're doing now, or what do they call it, industrial communications and large groups and so on and so forth. And I'm really fortunate that I get to use a lot of that today.
When you and I were initially talking about you being on the podcast, you described yourself as a human stories champion. And I'm wondering if you can tell me what that means to you.
Well, what it means to me is that in marketing insights or marketing research, we all talk about the importance of storytelling. For that matter, it's important everywhere, no matter what line of business we're in. And I say, yes, that's very important, how we craft stories, how we share them out, and how we tell them if we're fortunate to present to various stakeholders. In order to have a good story and then share that story in a meaningful way, you have to elicit the story from consumers or customers in qualitative research. So, of course, I'm a champion of my clients' businesses while I'm working for them and of their initiative and what they need to get out of it. In order to fulfill that for them, Seb, I need to be a champion of the consumer, and by definition in qualitative research, be a champion of their story or stories, whether I'm talking to one person at a time or two, or, you know, a focus group of people. And really, it starts with making people feel comfortable. If you want to hear whatever the story or story is that you're working on, it could be their background, it could be how they came upon a product and some meaningful usage occasions that conjure up special memories for them or not, or you're talking to them about something truly serious like a healthcare issue or some other personal milestone that wasn't so pleasant, they have to feel comfortable with me. So I do that right from the get-go, and in turn, they share their story with me and our clients, and I can champion their story and bring that to the forefront for the client in terms of understanding what their consumers or customers are like.
One of the things that I find so interesting is that idea of championing the person's story. What goes into, for you, being a champion, whether it's to your clients or to other stakeholders, for the individual story?
There's so much that goes into it, because qualitative moderators like myself are not just moderators. We're marketing strategists. I'm a orchestra leader. I'm a supporting player in a cast of one, the most important actors being the person or people I'm interviewing. So I need to really think about bringing my full self. And I will tell you that 99% of the time, the person you're seeing right now is the person that's moderating. In other words, I bring myself to the party, the moderation party. And of course, if I'm having a bad day, I try not to bring that part of it. You know, we're all human. And also reflecting back what that person is like. If I'm talking to a super duper extrovert, which I can kind of sniff out from the beginning, I think, then I raise my game a little bit in my excitement, if you will. And I'm going with extremes now. If I'm talking to an introvert or someone who perhaps is neurodivergent in some way, different than most of the people perhaps that I interview, then I'll slow it down a little bit. One, to give them time to feel more comfortable, to give them time to process the question and what I'm, you know, following up on. And all of that leads to making sure that they feel comfortable talking with me. It's very rare that I have a respondent, a participant, a person that doesn't want to share. After all, they signed up for the project, they qualified as whatever the qualifiers are. And I can pretty much tell from the get-go when they come on screen how it's going to go. Sometimes I'm surprised. Usually I'm surprised in a good way. It starts with me coming on camera and really welcoming the person. And when they say my name to start, like just a normal everyday conversation with them, "Sue, it's great to be here with you. I know it's going to be a good conversation," or "I believe it is." It's a great motivator to go forward.
So interesting. What is it for you that using your name signals?
A little bit of a personal conversation. Of course, it's personal on their end. I'm not talking about me in any great length other than maybe in the intro talk. If they say they're into reading books, I might say, "Oh yeah, what have you read recently? Love to read books," but I don't go too much farther than that. And so when they say my name, I feel as though it's a conversation that they want to have as much as I want to have. If it's a B2B person, that's also very meaningful, because when I interview B2B people, oftentimes, but not always, they're rushed. They're fitting me in is usually how it goes. And when they say my name, I know that they're a little more present. I hope to bring them to be even more present through the interview. That to me makes it more human, if you will.
So a while back, you and I were talking about creativity in the research process. And you mentioned that you have a bit of a theory about creativity, and that you wanted to talk about how you believe that researchers can find it, use it, and your belief that everybody has it in the research process. So I wanted to give you some space to sort of talk a little bit about your theory of creativity and where creativity fits in research and how creativity can enhance the way that we do research.
I'm going to say that creativity fits everywhere in every aspect of our life and business. My recent hashtag on LinkedIn was "Art is everywhere." If we dial back for a moment, what is creativity? So creativity to me is not necessarily that one knows how to use a paintbrush or a crayon or a pencil or a sketchbook, so on and so forth. Creativity is, I think, at its core in business, being resourceful. And that resourcefulness can come from so many different places and people. It can come from collaborating with your colleagues and often collaborating with your competitors. And I love that concept, because we can learn from each other and we both win in that way. Collaboration goes further than just the people we know. It also goes into meeting people we don't know and from other disciplines, and talking to people in HR or in software development or whatever it is, and being able to grasp something from that conversation and use it in our business. So I often get Seb in interviews, particularly for consumers versus B2B interview, but sometimes both, where people will say to me on screen, I'm not creative at all, so I'm not sure if this is a good answer. And I'll say, well, just give it to me. You know, let's not judge anything here. Remember, it's the judgment-free zone, probably one of the few places in the world when you get on a qualitative interview. At least it should be. So they say that, and then the next thing out of their mouth is a home run. You know, they're telling me the way that they would improve a concept that I'm showing them. And I'm trying not to have my eyeballs pop out of my head because it's the best thing I've heard all day. Not necessarily the worst thing I've heard all day, but the best thing. People can be really creative. And I think it's a matter of redefining what it is. I'll be in a store, you know, I'll overhear a conversation and two people will be talking and one will say, oh, I don't have a creative bone in my body. And my answer to that, if someone were to ask me, is of course you do. Do you have relationships? Do you cook or bake? Do you run a household? Have you planned a party? Have you organized a fundraiser? I think creativity goes well beyond what we think about with a sketchbook. And I don't know if it's that people are not raised that way, or when they're kids, they're more, I think there's some research on this, that kids are more loose to try other things and be creative in quotes. And when we're adults, maybe we're not thinking like it that way. And that's not how I am. I think of everything as being a creative endeavor.
How do you think researchers can leverage and apply creativity, maybe in ways that they're not currently thinking of?
I think it's all about going outside of your comfort zone, trying something new. And it could be as small as trying a new way to ask a question, whether it's in a quantitative survey or in a qualitative discussion. Collaborating, we're back to collaboration, Seb. Collaborating with your colleagues. So, for instance, at RTI, we have what I'll call centers of excellence, different practices. I might be working on a financial services project, and there's something about it that makes me go to Joe, let's say, and say, Joe, I have this interesting challenge that I'm working on. Have you done anything recently that I could lift or steal? And would you know that Joe works in a totally different area of business? Let's say he works in CPG. And I'm learning about what in his concept test, let's say, and how I can bring that forward in my business project. If we spend all day just looking at our screen, or looking at our screen without other people being on the screen, or all day looking at the same documents that we've always looked at and always have stolen from, right? Don't create the wheel, just add some more spokes to it. It's very hard to break out of our comfort zone and to try something new. So I think for me, one of the ways that I do it is I love to network and I love to meet people who are in totally different disciplines, maybe people who have a different point of view from me on various things. And I feed off of that to learn new ways to approach challenges and opportunities.
Sounds like cross-pollination of experiences is a big part of what that means for you.
Absolutely. And being in, I think you mentioned in my bio that I was a quantitative researcher for a very, very long time. And I had an opportunity and started doing qualitative research. I'd always done just a little bit in my quant work in some projects like debriefing consumers after an in-person test of some sort. And in quantitative research, there is so many opportunities to be creative. I mean, the questions you ask, the storytelling, how you put it on your PowerPoint page, how you share it, how you socialize it with stakeholders. It's the same thing in qualitative. So in quantitative research, I've often thought of it as a linear type of process from, you know, start to the end. Of course, there are hiccups of all along the way with anything that we do. I think it's certainly more linear than qualitative is. But there are plenty of opportunities in quantitative research to bring that creativity in. In qualitative research, it's definitely not linear. That wasn't so much a surprise to me based on what I had done in marketing insights and research. Certainly in having a conversation, my daily conversations might not be linear. You know, daily conversations with colleagues or friends, what have you. Having a conversation with a consumer, that's why they call it a discussion guide, Seb, because it's just a guide. I don't know exactly where the conversation's going to go, even if I'm trying to drive the bus, you know, on page one. And then I have to decide really in a flash, am I going to go where Seb is taking me in the conversation, or am I going to say, please, let's hold that thought for one moment. I want to finish this with you. I have to really decide or come back to it. And that's what I mean about it not being linear. At the end, we want to get to the goal of learning things that we need to learn. How I get there may be very different than where we start and what we think is going to happen.
Sue, one of the things I'm curious about is outside of research, how you personally keep the creative instinct sharp, how you strengthen that muscle.
That's key. Building the muscle and strengthening the muscle is key on whatever we're doing. Lots of conversations with strangers and people I know. It's amazing when you talk to strangers in the supermarket or at the beach or wherever you are. You know, you got to read the room and see that there's some receptivity to it before you approach a stranger. When you talk to strangers, you can learn a lot about things that were never on your radar. One of my favorite conversations to build that creativity muscle and the empathy muscle, by the way, was talking to a World War II vet in the supermarket. He had a hat on that had the USS something ship that he was on. I hoped that it was real and he was the vet. He had me engaged for about 15 minutes. When I said, thank you for your service, somehow he started telling me about a battle in the Far East that I had never heard about. And I don't remember the island, but not the one we always hear about. And it was an amazing story. I'm not sure what I did with that story later on, but it reinforced for me that when you talk to strangers, you can learn a lot. So that's one way. The other way is reading and reading lots of different sources. I was talking to someone the other day and I said, I may not always want to read things that I don't agree with, or authors who maybe have a different point of view than me, or interviewers that have a different point of view than me. But if you read from various sources, different kinds of genres, different kinds of long form Q&A, you can really learn a lot and get the juices flowing. You have to be open to it, Seb. Be receptive to what can I learn from this, and not necessarily go into it as I've got to learn something, but just keep your mind open and start thinking about, ooh, I had never heard of that before. I'm going to either investigate it further or somehow incorporate it into my life and into my work.
Second last question from me, Sue. What keeps you motivated?
I think having fun and learning. So, I mean, I have fun at work. And part of that is because I work with great people, fun people, and we have similar mindsets. If we can't have fun, what's the point? I mean, there's other points to working. And thinking about how I'm helping people. People can be my clients, you know, my individual stakeholder or stakeholders. It can also be the company that I'm doing work for to help, like I said at the beginning, bringing their work forward and just making the day a better day. Because if I can't do that for myself or other people, I'm not really sure what the point is.
If folks want to learn more about you or RTI Research, where can they go, Sue?
They can go to rtiresearch.com. You can find me on LinkedIn under Sue Collin there almost every day and love to talk to people about various subjects, Seb.
Thanks so much for your time today, Sue.
Thank you, Seb. A pleasure to talk with you. Have a great one.